From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Listen to the voice of the people. For many times, the voice of the people is the voice of God.
I'm standing in Hyde Park. We've had a demonstration where some estimates are now in the region of 2 million people.
Possibly the biggest ever in Australia. Over 200,000 people.
Italy, 1.8 million people.
Reporting from Madrid, Spain, 750,000 people are here, and it is unbelievable.
Hi, this is Arundhati Roy, and I'm calling from Kerala in India, and I'm calling to speak to the people on the streets of New York and on the streets of almost every major city in the world.
The world says no to war. Tens of millions of people around the globe take to the streets to protest a Bush war. The U.S. plans to attack Iraq. In New York, Desmond Tutu, Danny Glover, Harry Belafonte, Angela Davis, and dozens of others spoke to crowds of hundreds of thousands. All that and more coming up. Tens of millions of people took to the streets over the weekend in some 600 cities around the world. They marched and rallied to protest the Bush administration's plans to attack Iraq. And New York City organizers say somewhere between 500,000 and 1 million people rallied. In San Francisco, 250,000 people marched. London, Madrid, and Barcelona each saw over 1 million people in the streets. Organizers say over 3 million marched in Rome. London Guardians reporting Italian state television did not broadcast the protests live because it would put, quote, undue pressure on politicians. Hundreds of other protests were held, spread across every continent in the world. Sites included Australia, Johannesburg, Tel Aviv, Syria, Tokyo, Bangladesh, South Korea, Hong Kong, Thailand, Puerto Rico, Brazil, East Timor, India, and even the South Pole. We recorded these live reports from around the world.
Hi, my name's Andrew Bergen. I'm standing in Hyde Park. It's just getting dark. We've had the most wonderful day here today. We've had a demonstration where some estimates are now in the region of 2 million people. We had a fantastic range of speakers, major political figures, but most importantly of all, we had Jesse Jackson here, who was wonderful. He spoke on the stage with Tim Robbins, a very important actor from the States. And he also did a little thing with Miss Dynamite, who's a very well-known singer here. It's been a wonderful day, and really we think we've made a huge and impressive point against the war drive. Tony Blair has been really thrown by the Blix report at the United Nations yesterday. They were hoping that Blix would be far harder on the Iraqi regime, but Blix is saying that really they found nothing of importance. And in a sense, there's nothing to justify war. Tony Blair is very isolated in Britain. He now only has 9% support for a war without a second UN resolution. And it looks as if they won't get a second UN resolution. So he's been up in Scotland today talking about the morality of war. But we're also talking about the morality of war. We're saying that this war in Iraq would be immoral and that we are against it. And I think today we've seen the people of Britain stand up and be counted. This has been tremendous. This has been the biggest demonstration in British political history.
G'day, my name's Damien Lawson. I'm the coordinator of the Victorian Peace Network in Melbourne, Australia. We're a growing coalition of trade unions, students, churches, environment groups, as well as local peace groups right across southeastern Australia. And we've just had the biggest demonstration in Melbourne we've ever had in Melbourne, possibly the biggest ever in Australia. Over 200,000 people filling the streets of Melbourne protesting against George Bush's plan for war. And, of course, the strong element that was coming right through the protest was wanting to bring Australian troops home from the Middle East, to be really opposed to John Howard's support for George Bush. John Howard's the leader of Australia. And it was really clear and strong coming through the demonstration that people saw this as being a war for oil and not about weapons of mass destruction. that people wanted to support the people of Iraq, not Saddam Hussein. But the way to do that is not through bringing more devastation on Iraq than's already been caused over the last 10 years.
My name is Gabriele Canario from Greenpeace Italy, and the peace rally is not yet ended. 1.8 million people turned out, and it was a very colorful, long march, lasting since 11 o'clock in the morning till now, and the process is still going on with a lot of music of people and a lot of people witnesses speaking in the main square where the old people gathered in Rome.
So hello to everybody. Here's Johannes Wims calling from Berlin in Germany. Yesterday we had a huge protest here in Berlin. Maybe you've heard about it. The police was speaking about 300,000 participants, but then they corrected and came up to 500,000. So being in a city of a bit less than 4 million inhabitants, this is quite a huge demonstration, and we didn't have such an experience since the early 80s during the protests on the Pershing and cruise missile.
Hi, this is Kit Kaguen. I'm from Paris, France. I was at the Manif. Manif is French for protest. It started down in the south of Paris, and it went up to Place de Bastille, and it was really nice. It was a very sunny day. There were about a couple of 100,000 people.
Hi, my name is Edgar Behrens. I'm calling. I'm reporting from Madrid, Spain, where the crowd here is just unbelievable. The crowd reaches, they're saying it's about 2 miles long, 500,000 people, perhaps 750,000 people are here. You'll see all walks of life here, people from the very young to the very old. The Spain has a situation here where 92% of the population is actually against the war, and yet Aznar, President Aznar, is backing Bush 100%. Yesterday, the Minister of Foreign Affairs in the Security Council, Ana Palacios, the Minister of Foreign Affairs here from Spain, was very eager to declare war. The people here are completely taken aback by her warmongering, and they are out in the streets in numbers. 750,000 people are here, and it is unbelievable. Pedro Almodóvar will be speaking soon here. He's going to open up the rally. Heard from the officials here that people are basically 2 miles away. They cannot even get any closer to the stage because it is so packed. The streets of Spain of Madrid are completely packed.
Hi, this is Arundhati Roy, and I'm calling from Kerala in India, where it's close to midnight, and I'm calling to speak to the people on the streets of New York and on the streets of almost every major city in the world, and I just want to make a small statement. The U.S. government's war to promote terrorism, because that's what it is, it promotes terrorism, has launched a two-pronged assault on the world. One is a military assault in the Middle East that seeks to redraw the map of that region and establish U.S. hegemony over oil. And the other is an assault on the intelligence of the human race. It's not the lies we're being told, but the quality of those lies that is truly insulting. And what we in the peace movement must do is to try and turn every bomb that is dropped on Iraq, that has been dropped on Iraq, into an expose of the criminals that are waging this war, because they are baby killers, water poisoners, long-distance bombers, merchants of death. And each of you who is marching for peace today is doing a wonderful, wonderful thing. Let no one persuade you otherwise. I wish I were there. Goodbye and lots of love. Once again, this is Arundhati calling from India.
The voice of The Indian writer Arundhati Roy in a surprise call to the protest in New York, among many other voices from around the world. There were also hundreds of protests in hundreds of smaller American cities and towns from Coopville, Washington to Augusta, Maine. Tomorrow we'll hear a report from Colorado Springs where thousands rallied peacefully until police attacked the crowd with tear gas and rubber bullets. We'll also hear a report from San Francisco where 250,000 people protested on Sunday. But right now, NATO has reached an agreement to carry out a U.S.-led plan to defend Turkey in the event of a war with Iraq, despite French opposition. The controversy began when the U.S. requested NATO provide Turkey with troops, surveillance planes, Patriot missile batteries, and chemical biological defenses. France, Germany, and Belgium vetoed the move. They said it would send the wrong signal at a time when they were hoping diplomacy and U.N. weapons inspections, not war, were the best way to disarm Iraq. Germany and Belgium eventually agreed to drop their objections. When France refused, the decision was moved to the Defense Planning Committee, of which France is not a member and therefore could not issue a veto.
Freedom, 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 freedom. Freedom. Sometimes I feel like I'm a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like I'm a motherless child. Sometimes I feel just like I'm a motherless child alone.
Richie Havens singing Freedom, opening the protest rally in New York. It is not clear how many people rallied. It is believed between 500,000 and 1,000,000 people were in the streets of New York. The New York City administration had denied organizers a permit to march, so demonstrators were forced to hold a stationary rally near the United Nations. Tens of thousands of people stretched north from the stage along First Avenue. Then it became hundreds of thousands, as tens of thousands were also on the streets of Second Avenue and Third Avenue and other parts of the city were met by police on horseback as well as riot police. Police barricaded the side streets leading to First Avenue, preventing more than 100,000 people from reaching the even stationary rally. So many people flooded the streets, police were overwhelmed, and in the end, the people took over the streets anyway. Well, we're going to now go to Saturday's New York rally. We begin with Archbishop Desmond Tutu, internationally renowned for his nonviolent campaign against apartheid in South Africa. The son of a school teacher and a domestic worker, Bishop Tutu became the first Black General Secretary of the National of the South African Council of Churches in 1978. In the 80s, he was one of the leading spokespeople for nonviolent resistance to apartheid. Archbishop Tutu led a campaign for an international boycott of South African goods and was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for the divestment campaign in 1984. He was elected Bishop of Johannesburg in 1985 and the Archbishop of Cape Town a year later. He retired from that office in 1996, but was immediately named Archbishop Emeritus. In 1995, then-President Nelson Mandela appointed Tutu to chair South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Archbishop Tutu is the author of Crying in the Wilderness and The Rainbow People of God, The Making of a Peaceful Revolution. He spoke at the protest in New York, The World Says No to War.
Hello! Hello! You're all such wonderful, wonderful people. I want to give you a very warm clap. Let's join me in clapping you. Come on. Oh. Thank you very much for coming out when it is not so warm. God is proud of you. God is smiling as God looks down on First, Second, and Third Avenue. God says, hey, aren't they neat? Because God is with us. People marched and demonstrated, and the Berlin Wall fell, and communism was ended. People marched and demonstrated, and apartheid ended. And democracy and freedom were born. And now people are marching and people are demonstrating because people are saying no to war. We say no to war. The just war theory says you need a legitimate authority to declare and to wage war. Only the United Nations is that legitimate authority. Any other war is immoral. The just war says, have you exhausted all possible peaceful means? And the world says, no, we haven't yet. And any war before you have exhausted all possible peaceful means is immoral. And those who want to wage war against Iraq must know it would be an immoral war. You know, those who are going to be killed in Iraq are not collateral damage. They are human beings of flesh and blood. They are children. They are mothers. They are brothers. They are grandfathers. You know what? They are our sisters and brothers. For we belong in one family. We are members of one family, God's family, the human family. And how can we say we want to drop bombs on our sisters and brothers, on our children? We said no to communism. We said no to apartheid. We said no to injustice. We said no to oppression. And we said yes to freedom. Yes to democracy. Now, I ask you, what do we say to war? I can't hear you. What do you say to war? What do you say to death and destruction? What do you say to peace? I can't hear you. What do you say to peace? What do you say to life? What do you say to freedom? What do you say to compassion? Well, we want to say, President Bush, listen to the voice of the people. For many times, the voice of the people is the voice of God. Vox populi, vox Dei. day. Listen to the voice of the people saying, give peace a chance. Give peace a chance. And let's say once more so that they can hear in the Pentagon, they can hear in the White House, what do we say to war?
No!
What do we say to peace?
Bishop Desmond Tutu at the World Says No to War protest in New York City as we go to break with Holly Neer and then hear Harry Belafonte.
Praying, I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God. Can we rise up, find the higher power, free up from fear, it will devour you. Watch out for the ego of the hour, the ones who say they know it are the ones who will impose it on you. I ain't afraid of your Yahweh. I ain't afraid of your Allah. I ain't afraid of your Jesus. I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God. Rise up. Find the higher story, free up from the gods of war and glory. Watch out for the threats of purgatory. The spirit of the wind will make a killing off a sinner, Satan.
Holly Neer at the World Says No to War protest in New York City in sub-freezing temperatures on Saturday as we turn now to actor and activist Harry Belafonte.
Today is a historic and a proud day in the name of America. The world has sat by with tremendous anxiety and with great fear that we did not exist. They have been told and they have felt that what our country with its press and the leaders in the administration have said, we today invalidate all that. We stand for peace. We stand for the truth of what is at the heart of the American people. This is not the first time that we as a people have been misled by the leadership. We were misled by those who created the falseness of the Bay of Tonkin, which falsely led us into a war with Vietnam, a war that we could not and did not win. We lied to the American people about Grenada and what was going on in that tiny island. You've lied to the American people about Nicaragua, El Salvador, Cuba, and many places in the world. And we stand here today to let those people and others know that America is a vast and diverse country, and we are part of the greater truth of what makes our nation. Dr. King once said that if mankind does not put an end to war, war will put an end to mankind. It was also said by a great president that when the state and the leaders of our government moves to a place of tyranny and becomes a society of secrecy, it is incumbent upon the citizens to not only raise their voices in criticism and protest, but they must understand that it is the right thing to do, that they are doing the patriotic thing. And those who fail to raise their voices with us today are the traitors of patriotism. were my friend Dr. King alive today, he would smile, because we will make a difference. And the message that we send to the world today is one of warmth and confidence, and we stand in solidarity with all the people of the world who are marching at this very moment to join us in this end to war. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Harry Belafonte addressing the anti-war protest in New York. Afterwards, we managed to pull him aside for a quick interview.
My comments about General Colin Powell is really not a personal confrontation. Black Americans and many peoples of color have always taken great pride in what those of us who have come from a history of oppression have achieved. And when an individual breaks through and becomes and comes into the place where decisions are made that can make a difference, we then have high expectations. Once that is rejected by those who have acquired this position, we may sit in quiet disappointment. But when the person who achieves that distinction then puts him or herself in the service of our oppression and those who create new ways in which to oppress us, that is morally unacceptable. And that is my argument with General Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. I expect, as do others, that their history should have prepared them for a much better articulation about how to treat people globally. Most of the people in the world who suffer from tyranny, most of the people in the world who suffer from the tyranny of oppression, the tyranny of hunger, the tyranny of ignorance, the tyranny of HIV/AIDS, there sits terror. And when you look very carefully at what it is that has caused this constant oppression, you will see that somewhere in there, America plays the game. And this gathering here today helps us understand that there is another America that is strong, that is resolute, and are made up of millions and millions of people. As a matter of fact, we do make the majority voice in this nation, and that we have let the world know that we are in solidarity with those who seek to have other ways than war to settle our grievances.
Mr. Belafonte, you have been an outspoken critic of this of the government, U.S. government, for decades now in your role as a part of the peace and justice community. If you had an opportunity to speak with President Bush, a man of your stature, what would your message be to him?
Dr. King once said that to conquer your enemy is no victory. He will only rise again to confront you. What we've got to do is to look for the moral center that will help us prevail in convincing these men and some of the women who are involved with them that it is not politically expedient to do what they're doing. They're killing people all over the world and stimulating the possibility that that anger will continue and that rage will continue to haunt the generations that come after us. What I try to convince the president on is that he can no longer play a morally bankrupt game, that he must understand that people will not stand for it, and that we will come the right time, which would be the next election. If it is not stolen from us again, we will be able to emphatically show the world that America is not for war.
What about that issue of the election being stolen? The fact that the man who occupies the White House right now was not democratically elected president?
I think that was the first sign for Americans that we are in great jeopardy. Most people say, not in America. You know, fascism and oppression cannot happen in this country. That is more a prayer than a possibility. And I think that when we saw the theft of our government, when we saw the suspension of civil liberties, when we saw the changing of the Constitution, when we see that people can be arrested without charge and without counsel and without anybody communicating, all these are signals that we are in great danger of becoming oppressive, and totalitarian. It was exactly the same way things happened in Nazi Germany. And people in the beginning remained silent. And that silence began to erupt when it was a little too late. I think America's got to awaken to the truth of what's going on in our nation.
Right. The administration has said that the Homeland Security Act is necessary in order to protect Americans. Given what you've just said, what is your reaction to this Homeland Security Act that tends to be rolling back or eroding the constitutional?
I think the security that American people need is the security of truth. I think they need the security of employment. I think they need the security of social and physical development. I think we need to have health care. I think we need security in education. We sit with the largest population of prisoners in the world. Over 2 million men and women suffer in our prisons for reasons that they don't deserve to be in prison for. And I believe that when you look at that number, most of them are African Americans and Mexicans. We have more black people in the prisons of America than we have in the universities of America. And I think therein sits the great insecurity of this country. Were we to change all that, America would be one of the most secure nations in the world. And what these men are doing, and Ashcroft's doing, with all of this hoopla, is to distract the American people, and we are being misled. And we must be very careful. There's an old saying that if you control what people know, you control what people do. And we must get out the truth so people can begin to think differently.
Harry Belafonte, I spoke to him with Verna Avery Brown of Pacifica Radio as we turn now back to the stage with Angela Davis at the protest, The World Says No to War.
Good afternoon. It is a good afternoon to be in New York City. This vast community gathered here in fierce solidarity with people who are demonstrating all over the world, in Seattle and in Raleigh, in Rome, London, Cape Town, and Manila. This community most perfectly represents the city of New York. Thank you. Yesterday, Colin Powell boasted in the UN Security Council that he represented the world's oldest democracy. New York City's refusal to grant a march permit for this demonstration is a travesty of democracy. And so we are here this afternoon to assert our democratic right to march. We are here to challenge the Bush administration's strategy of pretending to defend democracy by trampling upon people's democratic rights. We thus oppose the USA Patriot Act and other legislation specifically targeting immigrant communities. This is a historic protest. And we link our protests against the war on Iraq to the historic 1982 March to the United Nations, a march of 1 million people demanding nuclear disarmament. 21 years later, as we say, no war on Iraq, we are still calling for nuclear disarmament. It is ironic how the term weapons of mass destruction has become inextricably linked to Iraq. Have we forgotten which country claims the largest nuclear arsenal in the world? And so, yes, we say no weapons of mass destruction should be in the hands of any government in the world. The Bush administration tries to generate fear and hysteria, tactics reminiscent of the McCarthy era. Tom Ridge hoped to set off a national march to hardware stores for plastic sheeting and duct tape. Some people may have joined that march of fear, but many more are participating in demonstrations of collective courage. We are here today because we are concerned about the deterioration of political culture instigated by George W. Bush. He has lowered the level of political discourse to discussions about evildoers and hunts for terrorists. This simplistic political discourse is fundamentalist in its impulse. It is designed to stop critical thinking. It is designed to prevent us from recognizing the U.S. government's and corporate designs on Iraq's oil. Our responsibility to stop the war on Iraq is a responsibility to the future. We cannot allow the U.S. government to establish a precedent that justifies future assaults, especially on peoples of the southern region of the world. We are here because we are concerned about rising poverty in our own country. We are concerned about attacks against single mothers, about structural racism, about homophobia, about the incarceration of what the government considers disposable populations. We are concerned about the continued repression of political prisoners, including Mumia Abu-Jamal and the five Cubans in Florida. We are concerned about the symbiotic relationship between the prison industrial complex and the military industrial complex. We are concerned that we are on the brink of war, but we feel heartened that key members of the UN Security Council are resisting the rhetorical tricks of Colin Powell. And the French Foreign Minister, Dominique de Villepin, evoked the rapidly developing global anti-war movement when he said yesterday, "Give peace a chance." We are here because we stand together in solidarity with the September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. And we are heartened because we know that our bodies, our voices, our hearts do make a difference. They make a difference when we unite as we are doing today, when we unite for peace and when we unite for justice. Thank you.
Angela Davis. Danny Glover also addressed the New York protest, "The World Says No to War."
Peace, no war. Peace, no war. We come here to reclaim our right as citizens of the world to peacefully protest. We must all stand as one voice. We've come to demand that the real users of weapons of mass destruction, our own country, dismantle them, that those who manufactured this climate of fear stop their lies and heed the will of the people and the nation and the rest of the world to say no to war. That's why we come here. We've overcome many obstacles in order to stand here this afternoon. For one, nature's unyielding and unforgiving reminder that this is mid-February and it's cold. But Mother Earth has smiled on us because she understands clearly that our voice must be heard. She knows that she is sick and only we the people can heal her. She knows that. We've overcome the obstacles that have been placed in our path on this journey by the city of New York and the state of New York and the federal institutions, yet we overcome our own fear to be here today, because only with the acknowledgement of that fear do we demonstrate our real courage to stand up today. But we're here. We stand here because our right to dissent and our right to be participants in a true democracy has been hijacked by an administration of liars and murderers who curse us because we stand in the way of their tyranny, who cursed us because we stand in the way of their unholy and brutal agenda, an administration whose villainy and greed is insatiable. We stand at this threshold of history and say to them, not in our names, not in our names. But we stand, as we stand here, and our stand is critical because inevitably in the future, we'll have to challenge U.S. policy in the Gulf of Guinea. We'll have to challenge U.S. policy in other places where other oil-producing countries in Africa. We'll have to do that, and we have to challenge the potential recolonization of Africa. So we stand here. But we stand here because we stand on the shoulders of others who've come before us and who call for peace and justice. Men and women like Fannie Lou Hamer, Harriet Tubman, Martin and Malcolm, W.E.B. Du Bois, Toussaint Louverture, who at 47 years old led an assault against slavery on the island of Haiti 200 years ago. And we stand here, yes, we stand here, because Paul Robeson would be proud for us to stand here. And he would say to us that we are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder.
And you are listening to Democracy Now! The world says no to war. The massive rally in New York on Saturday, joining tens of millions of other people around the world protesting war. Our break now with Betty on the New York stage.
Na 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 na. I'm Humpty Dumpty, who's had a great fall. I'm mixed up and messed up and all turned around. I'm upset, downset, and no fun at all. I'm people, just people, and I'm broken. All the queen's horses and all the queen's men can't patch me, nor mend me, nor glue me together. I'm upset, downset, and I want it to end. I'm people, just people, and I'm broken. Oh, it hurts when I laugh. I can't even smile, so I guess I'll stay broken a while. If I were a watch, I'd get quickly repaired or stitched up and sewn like a dress with a tear. But I'm people, just people, and I'm broken, broken.
Betty, you are listening to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. On the day before the worldwide protest, Chief UN Weapons Inspectors Hans Blix and Mohamed El-Baradei went before the United Nations Security Council to announce no weapons of mass destruction had been found in Iraq. Blix cast doubt on evidence provided to the UN by Secretary of State Colin Powell, and El-Baradei called for increased inspections. The report was followed by an impassioned anti-war address by French Foreign Minister Dominique de Villepin. When he finished his remarks before the Security Council, the gallery burst into to spontaneous applause, an unprecedented event at the United Nations. We'll hear his remarks in a moment, but first we'll start with an excerpt of UN Weapons Inspector Hans Blex.
More than 200 chemical and more than 100 biological samples have been collected at different sites. Three quarters of these have been screened using our own analytical laboratory capabilities at the Baghdad Center. The results to date have been consistent with the Iraqi declarations. We have now commenced the process of destroying approximately 50 liters of mustard gas declared by Iraq that was being kept under UNMOVIC seal at the Mutana site. One-third of the quantity has already been destroyed. The laboratory quantity of thioglycol, a mustard gas precursor, which we found at another site, has also been destroyed. The total number of staff in Iraq now exceeds 250 from 60 countries. This includes about 100 UNMOVIC inspectors, 15 IA inspectors, 15 aircrew, and 65 support staff. Mr. President, in my 27th of January update to the Council, I said that it seemed from our experience that Iraq had decided in principle to provide cooperation on process, most importantly, prompt access to all sites and assistance to UNMOVIC in the establishment of the necessary infrastructure. This impression remains, and we note that access to sites has so far been without problems, including those that have never been declared or inspected, as well as to presidential sites and private residences. In my last updating, I also said that a decision to cooperate on substance was indispensable in order to bring through inspection the disarmament task to completion and to set the monitoring system on a firm course. Such cooperation, as I have noted, requires more than the opening of doors. In the words of Resolution 1441, it requires immediate, unconditional, and active efforts by Iraq to resolve existing questions of disarmament, either by presenting remaining prescribed items and programs for elimination, or by presenting convincing evidence that they have been eliminated. In the current situation, one would expect Iraq to be eager to comply. While we were in Baghdad, we met a delegation from the government of South Africa. It was there to explain how South Africa gained the confidence of the world in its dismantling of the nuclear weapons program by a wholehearted cooperation over 2 years with IAEA inspectors. I have just learned that Iraq has accepted an offer by South Africa to send a group of experts for further talks. How much, if any, is left of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction and related prescribed items and programs? So far, UNMOVIC has not found any such weapons, only a small number of empty chemical munitions, which should have been declared and destroyed.
Chief UN Weapons Inspector Hans Blix addressing the United Nations Security Council on Friday. The first permanent member of the UN Security Council to respond was French Foreign Minister Dominique de Villepin. He spoke through a translator.
There are those who think that inspections in their very essence cannot be effective at all. But let me recall that that was the very foundation of Resolution 1441, and that inspections are producing results. One may judge them inadequate, but the results are there. Then there are those who believe that continuing the inspection process is a kind of delaying tactic to prevent or avert military intervention. That naturally raises the question of how much time is allowed Iraq. And this brings us to the heart of the matter. What is at stake is our credibility and our sense of responsibility. Let us have the courage to see things as they are. There are two options. The option of war might seem a priori to be the swiftest. But let us not forget that having won the war, peace has to be built. Let us not delude ourselves. This will be long and difficult because it will be necessary to preserve Iraq's unity and to restore stability in a lasting way in a country and a region harshly affected by the intrusion of force. Faced with that perspective, there is an alternative, inspections, which allow us to move forward day by day with the effective and peaceful disarmament of Iraq. In the end, is that choice not the most sure and most rapid? No one today can claim that the path of war will be shorter than the path of inspections. No one can claim that it would lead to a safer, more just, more stable world. For war is always the sanction of failure. Would this be our sole recourse in the face of the many challenges at this time? So let us give the United Nations inspectors the time they need for their mission to succeed. But also let us all be vigilant and ask Mr. Blix and Mr. El Baradei to report regularly to the Council. France, for its part, would propose another meeting on 14 March at the ministerial level to assess the situation. We would then be able to judge the progress made and what remains to be done. Given this context, the use of force is not justified at this time. There is an alternative to war, disarming Iraq via inspections. Moreover, premature recourse to the military option would be fraught with risks. The authority of our action is based today on the unity of the international community.
You are listening to Dominique de Villepin, the French foreign minister, at the United Nations Security Council on Friday. The protests on Saturday were preceded by the protest at the Security Council on Friday. We're back to Dominique de Villepin.
Such intervention could have incalculable consequences for the stability of this scarred and fragile region. It would compound the sense of injustice, increase tension, and risk paving the way to other conflicts. We all share the same priority, fighting terrorism mercilessly. This fight requires total determination. Since the tragedy of September 11, this has been one of the highest priorities facing our peoples. France has been struck hard by this terrible scourge several times, and it is wholly mobilized in this fight, which involves all of us, which we must pursue together. That was the sense of the Security Council meeting held on 20 January on France's initiative. 10 days ago, the US Secretary of State, Mr. Powell, reported alleged links between Al-Qaeda and the Baghdad regime. Given the present state of our research and intelligence in liaison with our allies, nothing allows us to establish such links. But we must assess the impact that disputed military action would have on this level. Would such intervention today not be liable to exacerbate divisions between societies, cultures, peoples, divisions that nurture terrorism? All along, France has been saying, we do not exclude the possibility that force may have to be used one day if the inspectors' reports concluded it was impossible to continue inspections. The Council would then have to take a decision, and its members would have to meet all of their responsibilities. In such an eventuality, I just want to recall now the questions I stressed at our last debate on 4 February, which we must answer. To what extent do the nature and extent of the threat justify immediate recourse to force? How do we ensure that the considerable risks of such intervention can actually be kept under control? In any case, in such an eventuality, it is the unity of the international community that would ensure and guarantee its effectiveness. It is the United Nations that, whatever happens, will still tomorrow be at the center of the peace to be built. To those who are anguished, wondering when and how we are going to cede to war. I would like to say that nothing at any time in this council will be done in haste, in misunderstanding, out of suspicion, or out of fear. In this temple of the United Nations, we are the guardians of an ideal, the guardians of a conscience. The onerous responsibility and immense honor we have must lead us to give priority to disarmament through peace. This message comes to you today from an old country, France, from a continent like mine, Europe, that has known war, occupation, barbarity. It is an old country that does not forget and is very aware of all it owes to freedom fighters who came from America and elsewhere. And yet France has always stood upright in the face of history before mankind. Faithful to its values, it wants resolutely to act together with all members of the international community. France believes in our ability to build together a better world. Thank you, Mr. President.
That was Dominique de Villepin, the French foreign minister. When he finished his remarks, the Security Council, the gallery burst into spontaneous applause, an unprecedented event at the United Nations. As we end today's program with the words of Phyllis Bennis of the Institute for Policy Studies, as she spoke at the anti-war rally in New York on Saturday.
What happened in the Security Council yesterday when the French foreign minister said that the UN must be a tool of peace and not a tool of war, and the chamber burst into applause. It had never happened in the history of the United Nations. It's George Bush that is isolated in the world. It's not us. We are the American people. We are part of a global movement. We are building a new internationalism with the United Nations as a part, saying no to war. The people of the world are saying no to war. Thank you very much.
Phyllis Bennis speaking at the World Says No to War rally on Saturday in New York, joining tens of millions of other people around the world saying no to war. And that does it for today's program. If you'd like to get a video copy, you can call 1-800-881-2359, 1-800-881-2359. Our website, www.democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Mike Burke, Angie Karen, Anna Nogueira, Alex Wolf. Mike DiFilippo is our engineer. We also want to thank Uri Galad and Angela Alston, Emily Kunstler and Johnny Sender, and Karen Renucci and Dennis Moynihan and Fatima Mujadidi. Also, special thanks to Brian Drillet and Noel Rabin and Robert Knight and Verna Avery Brown and Laura Flanders and many others who helped with this unprecedented media collaboration with Free Speech TV, Downtown Community Television, the INN Report, WBAI and Pacifica Radio, the Independent Media Centers, WBIX.org, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, Peace TV Multimedia Group, and WorldLink TV. You can also email us at mail, M-A-I-L, at democracynow.org. That's mail at democracynow.org. And we will end where we began with Richie Havens singing Freedom. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.
Clap your hands. Clap your hands. Clap your hands. I guarantee.